Hi, and welcome to today's episode. And this week we are going to be chatting with Bethany Tucker. Bethany is a young adult novelist. She writes fantasy and dark fantasy. And she told me that she's been writing since the age of 13. So she's got many years of experience. She says she can't imagine life without her writing. And she emphasizes how important it is that you study writing on a regular basis. So let's find out what else she's got to say. She is a wealth of information and has a lot of wise words for somebody so young. Let's crack on. Welcome to the Turning Readers into Writers podcast, where we teach beginner writers how to find the time and the confidence to write their first novel. I'm your host, Emma Desi, and I'm very excited that you're here. Thank you for joining me today, because if you've been longing to write your novel for forever, then this is the place to be. Think of this as your weekly dose of encouragement, of hand-holding, and general cheerleading as you figure out how you're going to write your first novel. Trust me, as a mum of three young kids, I know how tricky it can be to tuck some time aside for yourself on a regular basis. And even when you do find that spare 5 minutes, you can feel so overwhelmed that no writing gets done. Trust me, I have been there, but this podcast is going to help you in practical ways, because once a week I'll be delivering an episode that gives you steps to building a writing routine, encouragement to build your confidence, and cheerleading until you reach the end. Okay, let's start.
So thanks so much for coming on today. I really, really appreciate it. I appreciate your time, because I know that you're very busy. But I'd love if you could just maybe start off by telling me a little bit about yourself and how you got into writing.
Okay, thank you very much for having me on. It's exciting. I got into writing. I don't know if you can really say I got into writing, because when I was 5 years old, I told my mom I was going to be a published author and make my money that way. And I had no vision for anything else. And when I was 11, I sat down and started writing my first book.
So you were focused, you were determined.
I was very focused. I finished my first novel, so to speak, like multi-hundred page novel at 13. And I haven't really looked back. I've done a lot of other things, because money doesn't grow on trees. but I've never really had this idea of myself without writing. Now, what that looks like and how that worked in my life has been different. So when I was a teenager, I realized, you know, this is a craft. This is something you have to learn. And my father was amazing. He went through a little bit of a crisis with me when I was about 11. I was reading every book in the house, and I could read incredibly fast, because he'd kind of gone on this kick about speed reading for himself. And I had learned to read subaudibly, which means I could read without hearing the words in my head.
I can't do this.
Most people can't. Maybe this is a testimony to my parents never having TV in the house or whatnot. And I actually personally support tech for kids. I think they need those skills now. But I would get so excited about the books I was reading, like Secret Garden was one of my favorite books as a child, that I would cover my mouth with my hands, because I figured out if I stopped moving my lips, I could read the words faster. So I was just so in love with these worlds that I would find through the books that my parents had. And they always read to me. They always encouraged me to read. But I had started reading faster than mom and dad could keep up.
Right.
So after he took me to a bookstore and he bought me a book, and I finished reading it before he managed to drive me home, he marched into a used bookstore and he asked the man for the largest book he had. And the man handed him War and Peace.
And you were 11 at this time.
Yeah, I read it. Wow. And after that, Dad threw up his hands and he took me to the library. And he got me a library card and he said, "I can't keep up. Talk to me if you read anything that's inappropriate."
education you can get, I imagine.
Poor man was at his wit's end. So I had access to this amazing world of everything. And I started going through all of the books on craft in the library. And I just read them and reread them and reread them. In writing is really something you do have to study. We don't just know how to write. So even though I just knew I wanted to write, it took years of study. So, one of the first most important books I ever read on writing was Orson Scott's Card, Character and Viewpoint. Okay. And I don't even know how many times, this is the book. I actually have a copy with me. It's not the original. I don't even know how many times I read that book, trying to just imbibe it and read it. And then there was this wonderful lady who knew I wanted to write. She wasn't a fiction writer, but she was very good with grammar.
Okay.
And she just had me come over to her house for dinner once a month for a couple of years. And I would give her my writing and she would read it and comment on it and mark up my grammar and give it back to me. And we never paid her. This was an act of love. It made so much difference because honestly, I mean, you're a mother. You know what the limits of motherhood are. Parents don't have every skill set in the book.
No.
And my parents honestly could not keep up with what I was producing because I would write for an hour a day, every day. I treated it the same way you practice an instrument.
Okay.
So, I mean, I knew what the practice of instruments was. We performed, me and my sisters performed like 35 times a year. So I knew what the discipline of art was, and I applied that to my writing.
Right.
And I can't take credit for this discipline. What?
Discipline has been a big part of your writing career. So much like your music and learning to play the notes and play together with your siblings, writing has also been been discipline. You've had to tell yourself to sit down and do it every day, just a little bit every day, so you can hone your craft.
Yes, very much so. People think, oh, I'm just going to write a book. And I'm like, no, really, you're not just going to sit down and play Mozart either. So, I mean, I really have to give my parents so much credit because even though they weren't writers, they gave me the discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who's ever played a sport, ever, you know, learned how to dance, take those skills. You already know so much. Just give yourself permission to apply that to your craft because it's the same.
So that probably works is quite relevant to a number of my listeners because they are just starting out their writing career. They're where you were when you were 13 writing your first novel. And so undoubtedly, many of them have a full-time job. They have children. They probably have other caring responsibilities. How can they combine those other responsibilities and elements of life with their writing? Because I imagine that's something that you've got to do as well, is combine any other jobs that you do, paying jobs you do, with your writing.
Yeah. Actually, for the last couple of years, I've been dealing with a disability, so I haven't actually been able to work outside the home. And why I chose to take writing full-time now.
Right.
But before that, I mean, I taught school in Asia. Like, I've taught school in four different countries. mostly English at first, and then I worked in a language, like a cultural exchange center.
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked for not really a subsidiary, but the Jiangsu Department of Higher Education in China. For the Jiangsu province. I worked there as part of a partnership program with Oxford University and Stanford, where they sent people in to basically culturally prepare Chinese students who were going to study abroad.
Right. Oh, okay. Yes, I can see
so
what
you
did. Yes.
Yeah. So I actually have a degree in East Asian studies, and I spoke Chinese to the level that I could walk into a classroom without a translator and teach.
That's very impressive because Chinese is very difficult.
I'm not good at it. And it's been like 5 years since I used it. So I'm not even going to pretend that I can speak it well at the moment. But I had just enough just enough more skilled than other people that they were able to send me into this school. I didn't see another native English speaker for 5 months at one point in time.
Well, there's nothing like immersion, is there, to learn a new language? Well, there you go.
No, wow. Nothing
did
like
immersion. Did you manage to continue doing your writing over that time while you were still teaching?
I did. So what I would say is, well, I'm going to back up because most of your readers, their moms, they're working at home. In high school, we were all homeschooled. And frankly, my mom had a health condition at the time. She was overwhelmed. We were heavily busy. So I basically did my education at night and helped my mom during the day. It was an interesting combination. So when I was 17, I won an award for writing. And it was for a short story, and it was so dark and disturbing that my father called me on the phone to check on my mental health when he finally read it. But the fact of the matter is that my littlest brother was teething and had a fever at the time I wrote the story. And I wrote that story in my head while walking back and forth holding him for 2.5 hours because he could not stop crying. Oh. And, you know, you have to be with that child when that child needs you. Mm-hmm. You don't really have a choice to say, oh, you're just going to go down now. I mean, No. You know this. But
were you able to keep that story in your head then?
Yeah, but it was a short story. It was like 800 words, no more. Okay. So I worked on it. I refined it. I understood what that feeling was going to be. And then I sat down and I wrote it in like an hour after he went to sleep and before dinner had to get made. So the thing that people think about writing, so many new writers think, oh, I have to be sitting at my keyboard to say it's writing time. But it's really not true. Like I have outlined entire books in my head over, you know, 2 weeks of washing dishes after everyone went to sleep. And now that we have smartphones, you can just stick it in there and talk to yourself. Yes. So you don't forget it.
Yeah. I quite often do that now. Yes. It's a great gadget to have.
Right. Isn't it? Mm-hmm. So I would say so much of my writing has happened away from the keyboard. You choose what you're thinking about. So while you're driving, for me, when I worked in Japan, I taught at 6 different preschools. So I was on my bike. So one, my legs were in the best shape ever. And two, I used that time to either be thinking about the story I was going to write over my lunch break. Cause I would go teach. And then I had a split shift or a break at lunch. So I would run to Starbucks, scarf food down, type for 30 minutes, get up and go back to the office. But I would be typing up what I had thought about while I was on the bike writing from school to school.
Okay.
And that just being prepared whenever you had those minutes to sit down. We really can be quite disciplined in what we're thinking about. Mm-hmm. We don't think about scheduling our thought time, but we really should.
Yes, that's a good point. No, we don't. I mean, I'm also a very big advocate of scheduling. It's one of the things that I do teach as well, but actually not the thinking. And maybe that is, you know, the doing, schedule the doing, but maybe I need to sort of include that in my teaching as well, is schedule your thinking.
Yeah, like I will just say, oh, I'm going to wash the dishes because I need to think. I hate washing dishes without something to do. I'm bored. I will not wash dishes.
So do you find that when you're doing something else that facilitates kind of just releasing the subconscious and letting your brain wander so the ideas come?
I think it's a really good way to trick our imposter syndrome, because when you're staring at the blank page, we have all these myths in our head of what a writer is and what we should be doing. I struggle with imposter syndrome every single time I sit down to write. Mm-hmm. It's like this friend that I'm annoyed with continually. But when you're doing something else, like folding laundry or cleaning house or commuting or even exercising on the treadmill, you kind of bypass that because you're doing something else. You're just playing. You're just thinking about it. It doesn't matter what you do. It's this mental playground. Mm-hmm. And you can just ignore that. And nothing matters till you put it down the page. And eventually you learn that nothing matters until, you know, you finish your editing and you can play to the end. I've tricked myself through multiple novels by telling myself that it was all trash and I could throw it away when I was done. And I was just going to put it down to amuse myself. And at the end I had a book, but I hate every book I have. Usually at the time that I publish it, like, I think it's the worst thing ever. At some point I'll think, oh, this is perfect. And then, you know, 2 days later, I'll think, you know, this entire thing is trash. I should throw it away and start over. And I've learned not to do that.
So, yeah, so what is it that stops you from putting that book aside and starting on a new project? What makes you move forward with it and take the courage? Because I think it does take courage to press publish and have that conviction of your creativity, of your art. So what for you stops you, do you think, from saying, oh, no, this isn't any good, I need to start again?
I once went to a museum and I saw this beautiful exhibit on Leonardo da Vinci. And Leonardo da Vinci has notebooks and notebooks of sketches and drawings and things that he never finished and he put aside. And there's drafts and drafts of all of his best work. And the fact of the matter is that Leonardo da Vinci was not happy with his own work. He just kept trying again and again. And I am not arrogant enough to assume I'm better than Leonardo da Vinci. So I'm going to eventually put it out in the world because he did. Basically, you have to try eventually. Mm-hmm. And I think my background in performing music and my background as a teacher, even my background with my siblings, helps, because you writing, we can wait. We can hang on to that in our little hearts and be like, oh, it's mine and I'm going to get it perfect someday. But so much of the rest of our lives, we have to show up whether or not we're perfect. So we all have the skill set of showing up whether or not we're perfect. Mm-hmm. I've walked into classrooms where my boss did not tell me who the students were or what I was teaching. And I was terrified, but you walk into the classroom and a whole bunch of people look at you and you have to smile and say, we're going to do X today. And you roll with it. And with writing, we have the chance to get an editor. We have a chance to take it to critique groups. And eventually you find that one or two people that can talk to you when you decide it's trash and tell you that, no, it's good. You can go forward.
That's such a great idea that you've summed that up so nicely. You know, we show up imperfectly in so many other aspects of our life. Why not our writing too? I think that kind of really puts it into context that we're never, ever going to be 100% happy with what we write. Even our favorite authors, the people we admire, they're probably not 100% happy with their books, but imperfect or not, we just have to show up. We have to have the conviction of ourselves and believe in ourselves and go ahead with it and go for it anyway. So I really love that. We're imperfect exactly. In other aspects, we can be imperfect in our writing as well. I really like that.
So we are really human.
Yes, exactly. It's part of the human condition, isn't it? So you mentioned earlier, just to move on a little bit, you were saying that now you do write full time. And so what does your routine look like now? And how has that evolved since you've gone full time?
So you can only write so many hours a day. And I personally have a condition where I wake up in the morning and I don't always know if I can get out of bed or not. So there's that constant element. I will give you my ideal, because that's probably the most useful for everyone else.
Okay.
Is that I get up and I do my personal practice and like meditation or exercise, something like that. And then I have a clean desk. It is a very small desk. But I have a set workspace where I work. And honestly, I used to keep a notebook for myself of my plans. I called it my writing journal. So I would know the day before what I was going to be working on the next day. Mm-hmm. Now I use this. You've probably heard of it.
Yes.
52 Weeks of Writing by Mariel Smith. I've been using it for 5 months now. And I absolutely adore it because it allows me to sit down and plan my week. And it's like talking to a coach.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So I sit down, I plan my week on Sunday night, and then I kind of know what I'm going to be working on. And usually I have my word count. I'm not an extremely fast writer. You think, oh, you went full time and you'll suddenly be doing so much more. And the fact of the matter is, tasks will fill up all the space you give them. So I plan to kind of push that down. So I aim for about 3,000 words a day.
Gosh,
and that takes me about 2.5 hours. If I have a plan. So because of the flexibility I need for my own conditions, I keep my plans pretty loose. I aim for 3,000 words a day, and I aim to do it earlier in the day if I can.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of it, I'm handling life. I keep house for my family, so there's still a lot of other responsibilities. And that's practically a part-time job by itself.
I can imagine, yeah. You're actually working as well as writing.
Yeah. So I do the cooking, the cleaning, the planning, like the household management. And then for me, it's really important that I'm still there for my siblings. So I say I work full-time because I don't do anything else for pay, but
right.
It's still more like 50%. And one of the things I've struggled with, and I think a lot of women do, is even when we tell ourselves this is what we're doing, if we're just writing, we say that word, that just writing. It's easy to let other people's emergencies and problems, you'd be like, oh, I can write later, or I can do this, just ease into my day. And I will not say I am perfect. I am not perfect. If my sister calls me in a panic, I will drop everything and take that phone call, which I couldn't do if I was in an office. So that has been something that I've been working on over the last year, is treating the time that I write as important work time.
Mm-hmm.
And setting those boundaries.
That mental shift is very, very important, isn't it? If you don't take it seriously, whoever you are as the writer, if you don't take it seriously, you can't expect other people to take it seriously either. So I think that is a big part of writing. Yeah.
It's a huge part of writing. And it's something that we have to pat ourselves on the back every time we manage to set that boundary and keep it. Because if we set it, most people respond pretty well once you set it.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, especially family, who are used to having access to their care person all the time, will be like, what? I'm not important anymore? But eventually they'll get it. Eventually mm-hmm. they will get it. And we just have to lovingly continue to set those boundaries. Mm-hmm. I'm extremely fortunate that my partner is completely supportive and will remind me to set boundaries when I don't set them.
Oh, that's handy. Yes.
I understand how lucky I am. So full-time for me has been learning to set boundaries, learning to set those hours, continually forgiving myself when I have to be flexible. My process creatively is I am a complete plotter.
Okay.
I did not used to be. I fought it. I would say it took me 13 years of writing before I gave in and became a plotter.
Oh, that's so interesting. Okay. And you kind of do hear about that. So I'm a discovery writer and find it very, very hard to plot. And I have been trying to, because every pantster who has become a plotter has, you know, enjoyed that process and feels the benefit. And you never hear of a plotter becoming a pantster. So it took you a while to get there, but you did. What made you persist with that?
I persisted because I wanted to be professional. I realized as I was researching that everyone who was making, well, pretty much everyone except Stephen King that I know of, he's an anomaly.
Yes.
Everyone I knew that was being successful at publishing, and for me, I don't want to write unless it's going to get out into the world someday.
Mm-hmm.
I write for an audience, whether or not they're there yet. So I realized that if I wanted to make this a profession, that I had to write faster. And I had this book I was working on, and I had been working on it for like 7 years. It had gone through like 8 drafts, at least. I lost count. And I realized I just didn't know where it was going. And it took so long to get anywhere. And then I would be like, well, I just have to write to that point and figure it out. And then I'd write to that point and something would be wrong and I'd be going back. And I was exhausted by this project. I was starting to wonder if I would ever finish. And at this point in time, I hadn't.
So, sorry, did you say that this was the first book that you were writing?
No, this right. was, it was my first large epic fantasy that I was writing.
Okay.
And this book has never been published. Well, a version of it was eventually published, and I unpublished it. I withdrew it from the market because I realized just how, it's not bad, but it was sincerely not up to my quality of writing eventually.
Okay.
So I took it down because it no longer matched the brand I was crafting. It will eventually be rewritten and published again, but not now. So I realized that I just needed to go to the end, but I didn't know where that end was. So one day while I was in Japan, I was on my bike. I was listening to a podcast by Michael Stackpole. He was one of the first writers to ever do a podcast. He's not doing it anymore, but those podcasts are still valuable if you can find them. So he said, write to the end. Whatever you're doing, stop going back, write to the end. That literally changed my life. Because I had been thinking, oh, I have to keep revising and revising. And I would revise to the middle over and over again and get exhausted because I wasn't finding the end. And he said, if you write to the end, then you'll see what the beginning needs to be, which is so true. I have almost, I don't know how many books I've written now. I know how many I've published. I don't know how many I've written. But we'll say it's 15 to 16. And the fact of the matter is, every time I reach the end, I realize the first chapter needs to be revised. Mm-hmm. Every time. Because you don't know yet. Mm-hmm. You have to learn. So for me, even though I plot, there's still an element of pantsing. There's still that element of discovery. Okay. I don't feel that I'm inhibited in any way. So I realized that plotting is just discovery writing on fast forward. And okay. once you understand that, you can sit down and you have all that exploration, all that excitement of the discovery writing, but you get to do it twice, the second time with a map.
Okay. So plotting is discovery writing on speed, did you say? Like that.
At speed, or I think of it as driving a car at 60 miles per hour instead of 30.
Okay.
You get on the highway. So what I do now is, and I got this from Johnny, Sean, and Dave on, they call it the self-publishing podcast, and now they do the story studio podcast.
Mm.
And they call it beats. And it's kind of like a paragraph per chapter. So for me, I sit down and I give myself about a week when I start a new book, and I just type out a paragraph of what I'm seeing in my head for each chapter. And if I see dialogue and stuff, I'll throw it in there. So my outline for my last book that was about, it was a YA, so it was about 65,000 words. I had a 10,000 word outline, but there were large chunks of dialogue in them as I like discovered the plot and I was doing my outline. You can quickly rearrange the timeline and check where you are in a 10,000 word outline, mm-hmm. where everything is like a paragraph or two per chapter.
Okay.
And you get that rush, you get the whole thing down. And I found that when I was just pantsing or discovery writing, that I would lose the next chapter that I was excited to write because I had to write the one I was currently in. But when I'm plotting, I get all that excitement down. It's all there. If something hits me out of the blue and I'm on chapter 3 and I remember I need, oh, this would be awesome in chapter 5, I just go into my beats and I drop that little note in chapter 5 and I don't lose any of that.
Okay. And do you find that you, do you feel that you must stick with that outline that you've done, or do you feel that there is flexibility there that if, as you're writing, an idea comes to you, you can go with it? Or are you quite conscious of the fact that you need to come back because you've got to hit chapter 5?
I am not rigorous with myself. But here's the secret that I didn't realize when I first started plotting is that the more you understand the structure of story, the more you emotionally want to go with the structure that you've set up. Because when you understand the arc, you understand a character arc, when you understand the emotional beats that are required to write, especially genre fiction, so that there truly are structures inside of story. There truly are these moments you have to hit. And as you understand what story is and what story does more and more, you emotionally are writing towards those points for yourself because you are your first reader.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find that the more I understand story, the less I veer off of my own plots because I've set those emotional beats that I need to hit. And then I'll write towards them because inside of us, we all know what a satisfying story is.
Mm-hmm.
The more, if you don't know what your story is saying, you're going to go lots of different places trying to find it. But once you have that true north, you're like, this is a story about a woman who does this and she's going to discover that. And you know what that north is. Even if you aren't doing a whole plot, you're going to start writing towards that north. If you sit down and be like, I have a scene, I'm going to see where it goes, and you have no idea what your point is to the story or what you're trying to say, you haven't thought about it for a week washing dishes, then you're going to write a lot of stuff and end up a lot of places because you actually don't have a place you're going.
Right. That
once
makes sense
you know
to me,
where
yeah.
you're going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, one of the things that I got taught to do was the first things that you write would be your first chapter, your middle chapter, and your last chapter. And I like that because it doesn't constrain me, but it gives me signposts. So I've got somewhere that I'm heading towards. So it sounds like doing the beats from the boys there, Johnny, Sean, and is it Dave?
Dave.
That they are sort of doing the same, a similar thing. They're giving you signposts, but those signposts are closer together. Yeah. And you're kind of filling the breadcrumbs, if you like, or following the breadcrumbs.
Yeah. There's this cycle, like a lot of people talk about the hero's journey. I personally just got my hands on a copy of The Virgin's Promise, which was more like a feminist idea of the same thing.
Okay.
But not exactly the same thing. It's there's a duality in the universe, as some people like to think of it. And so the hero's journey is considered like the more masculine story, and the Virgin's Promise is more the feminine story. Once you understand that we naturally, we have a middle, a beginning, middle, and end. Stories have that, just like you just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
If you know that, and then it just feels right in your body. I don't know how to say it more than that. But I would say learn what story structure is, and then start seeing it in your favorite stories.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if
I'm coming to more. Yes. When I wrote my first novel, it took me 5 years. It was all over the place. I didn't know exactly what you've just said. I didn't know who was doing what and what I was trying to say. I didn't know those emotional beats that I was trying to hit. But since I've been studying structure that bit more and understand it more, then it sped up the process a lot more. And even still, I've just started reading the Save the Cat. So I'm still learning all the time and reading other people's ideas of how to write. And I wonder if there becomes a point where you amalgamate what you take from each and create your own way of doing it.
I think so. I don't follow any particular story structure myself. I've just read enough of them that you start to feel what it is your structure is.
It's more intuitive now.
It becomes more intuitive. I just started reading a book. It's on my Kindle. Good stories don't write themselves. I literally got it last night. And I can send you the link for that later because I can't remember the author. But it's all about that emotional beat. I find that the emotional beats are as important or more important than just the events of the story.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
it makes sense. And I think as I'm a much newer writer than you are, but I kind of feel that I'm moving towards that. It's quite nice. With every story I write, I feel I'm moving more towards the emotional side than just the this happened, then this happened, then this happened.
That's
not a bad way to begin, is, you know, this happens, then this happens, then this happens. So if you're writing your first book, it's still a great way to keep the story moving forward and help you propel towards the end. So yeah. Now I'm fascinated talking to you, but I must be conscious of your time, and I want to kind of move on and try and get all these questions in. So you've talked about plotting and pantsing, and that's great. That was one of the things I wanted to ask you about. And we've mentioned a few craft books. You mentioned that you've just picked up the Good Stories Don't Write Themselves, and you mentioned the podcast with Johnny, Sean and Dave. Are there any other sort of craft books that you would recommend for a new writer, someone who's at the beginning of their writing journey?
I would definitely say Characters and Viewpoints by Orson Scott Card. I printed this out so I wouldn't mix them up. I would say Deep Point of View by Marcy Kennedy. Mm-hmm. That book is all about how to literally get inside your character and then tell the story from inside your character.
Ooh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. It's how to use language and perspective within the scene so that your character is with it. There's so many books, and a lot of people used to write outside of their characters, like J.R.R. Tolkien or Dickens. It's very much someone watching everything happen. But a lot of genre fiction today, if you want to be successful, readers want that closer inside.
Mm-hmm.
And it's emotionally satisfying to read. It's emotionally satisfying to write. So Marcy Kennedy's book is all about how to do that. It's actually a short read. And then after that, if you want something a little bit more challenging, I would say Dialogue by Robert McKee.
Okay. Yeah, Dialogue is certainly something that a lot of people struggle with. Yeah, I think they do. A lot of people worry about dialogue and getting that right. So we'll definitely put this in the show notes for everybody to go and have.
Yeah. Dialogue, the book, is about more than just dialogue. He actually offers really fascinating look on relationships and how to display relationships and information through dialogue.
Okay.
So it's almost an anecdote to show, don't tell. He actually tells you how to do that.
Ah, okay. That's something that I'm struggling with at the moment, show, don't tell. But that's a whole new thing, a whole new episode.
We could do an entire recording just on that.
So you mentioned this actually earlier. We were talking a little bit about how living with, you know, not living with fear, but accepting that things will be imperfect. And a lot of new writers sort of worrying about not being good enough and have feeling a bit that old imposter syndrome. But you've overcome that. And I think we've covered that then, didn't we, earlier on with the...
I would add one thing. You never overcome it. You never overcome it.
Okay.
You learn to live with fear. And I would say the faster you stop fighting fear and the sooner you make friends with fear, the better your life will be anywhere, in any way. When I was 19 years old, I packed up my bags. Maybe I was 20. It was like my birthday month. And I went to China for a year. I'm an American. I got on a plane and I went to China for an entire year on my own.
Wow, that was brave.
I was terrified, but it actually came out of writing, because when I was 13, I was writing a book set in China and I was trying to research it. And I finally said, I need to just go there. So I planned to go there during my uni days. And I did this exchange with Nanjing University. But the day I got on the plane, my mom drove me to the airport at 4:30 in the morning. She dropped me off at the curb, said goodbye. My mom is an amazing woman. But she's sometimes so cool with things. You're like, Mom, do you realize how important this is? You're just dropping me off. I'm going to the opposite side of the world. But she's awesome. I got to the plane And I'm carrying my backpack. My bags have already been stowed. My passport's already been gone through customs to leave. And my heart just cramped up in my chest. I'm leaving for 12 months. And I closed my eyes and I walked over the edge into the plane. And that's the thing you have to do, is you don't have to not be afraid. You just have to take one step, because any single moment that you're living through can only be so scary. Any single moment is only so scary. That moment you put a word down, it doesn't matter. The next moment you put a word down, it doesn't matter. The moment you hit publish for the first time, nobody's really watching. It can only be so scary. So if you only live with the fear that you're in right now, it's actually really, really small. And we have a lot more do-overs than we think we do. So just become friends with fear. Recognize that fear is teaching you things. Recognize that fear is telling you that this is a moment, that there's something happening. But fear is also the amalgamation of everyone else's insecurities being blasted back at you since you were a child. And you can choose how much of that to take with. And you can consciously say, okay, I hear you, you know, auntie who thought that everyone should be a lawyer and a doctor, or you didn't have a good career, or I hear you, someone who thinks you should never leave your hometown. But you don't have to take it on. Mm-hmm. You just have to live with it.
Mm-hmm. Such wise words, really, such wise words, yeah.
I've like been through enough terrifying things.
Fear is teaching you something like that. Now, I'd like to move on to what you're doing. And you have your a product called, or a service, I should say, called Your First Five Package. What can you tell us about that?
Okay, so this grew out of, I was trading work with some people on critiquematch.com, which is a site where writers can find critique partners. And I would recommend it to people who don't have access, especially right now when we're all in quarantine, to like an in-person critique group. So I was just trying to support my community, and I was working with a lot of first-time writers, and they didn't know what they didn't know, which is where we all start. We all start, we don't know. So a lot of people, the idea of treating ourselves with respect, of valuing our work, is really scary. And we look at that price tag to get a book professionally edited and we go, oh no, I'm not ready for that. Right? Yeah. So, and the truth is, a lot of us aren't ready for that. Our fear is telling us something true at that point. And we can learn a lot if someone just pointed us in the right direction. So this service is basically for that early writer who's like, I don't know what I don't know, and I want some direction. So basically, you send me the first 5,000 words of what you're working on, and I will go over it with a character critique for all the characters that show up, a setting critique, a point of view critique, which is basically the voice, like what voice are you telling the story in? I'll give you an assessment on your hook, like, is anyone really going to want to read this? And then I'll go over grammar and dialogue and tagging, paragraphing, all of that. And basically send you back a personalized letter of recommendations and, like, here's what to work on. 5,000 words is definitely enough to see where you're at with just the bare bones of line-by-line writing. Mm-hmm. The plotting a large book is another set of skills, but this will get you going in the right direction, because you can tell a lot by how someone sets a book up. And then I'll give you resources that are aimed at your particular areas of needed growth.
Okay.
And a letter explaining what's going on. Fantastic. So it's a flat price.
And I just cover all genres as well?
Yes. I have only been sent one thing where I just refused to continue working on the project because it disturbed me. But it was, Yeah, I'm not sure what the writer was thinking. It was extremely dark and disturbing. But I will do horror. I will do almost anything, as okay. long as it's not egregiously, egregiously immoral. And
okay.
I'm, by immoral, I mean, please don't support a Holocaust. I'm extremely open-minded in any other way.
Okay. Well, I'll certainly put a link to that in the show notes so people can go and have a look and find out a little bit more about you. So
what are you
working on right now? Because you write in a few different genres, don't you? You do young adult and you also do fantasy. Is that right? Epic fantasy?
Yes, I do dark epic fantasy. So when I say I'm open-minded, I have to be open-minded because my own work is rather challenging. And I don't actually, you know, talk about that pen name very much because it's for a niche audience. But I write as Mustang Rabbit for YA fantasy. Most of my work is
something I wanted to ask you about was, first of all, you know, why you choose to use a pen name and then why such an unusual pen name?
Mustang Rabbit has personal meaning for me. I was born in the year of the rabbit.
Okay.
And then Mustangs for me growing up were my inspiration for exploration and freedom. I grew up in California and Washington State, and we have wild horses. So I grew up on those stories of the wild horses. And for me, I always wanted to be a Mustang because they could run and they could go. And that sense of exploration and freedom and discovering freedom for me was a big part of young adult literature anyway.
Oh.
So someday I would like to go back and get my PhD in either sociology or history, and I will be publishing under that name, my personal name for that. And just brand-wise, it's easier to keep it cleaner. Mm-hmm. So when I was thinking about a name and someone said Lemony Snicket, and I was like, yeah, that's a fun name. Yeah, I always remember, you know, the series of unfortunate events, Lemony Snicket. So I was like, people are going to remember if I have an unusual name. So I went with Mustang Rabbit.
Cool. I love it, I have to say. I have to admit, though, not coming from your part of the world, I thought of the car Mustang rather than the horse, I have to admit. But
I had a Mustang as a child in the family, and it is kind of really fun to ride in a Mustang. It was an old refurbished one. My grandfather did it.
Nice. So where can our readers and our listeners find out more about you? Where can they discover you?
Okay. If you want to work with me in editing or coaching, it would be the art of I'm mixing this up. The art and science of words.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then for my YA fiction, it's mustangrabbit.com.
Cool.
Really easy to remember.
Brilliant. Well, I've got two last questions for you before we have to wrap up. And my first question would be, how do you fill your creative well? How do you replenish your creativity, say, at the end of a book?
That is a really good question. When I reach the end of the book, I'm kind of wrung out and like want to lay on the floor and stare at the ceiling. But refilling my creative well, I find that even though I'm an introvert, I need to talk to people. I need to hear their life stories. People are endlessly fascinating and will always, always give you weird and unusual ideas. The most boring person in the room probably has something to say. So for me, filling my well, especially when I was traveling, I was younger, like I honestly sat in the bar with old people that have been traveling the world forever and just bought them a drink and let them talk. Stay sober yourself so you remember what they say, but make sure they're pretty tipsy because then they start telling you everything. But besides talking to people, and just be a really good listener, let people talk and learn to ask those questions that open people up, because people will do surface stuff all day long, but almost everyone has a story to tell. And the more those stories you internalize, the more you understand story yourself, because you start hearing those emotional beats in the people's lives around you. So that's one way I fill it up. The other way is honestly music. Taking meditation has been a really big one for me, because that allows the thoughts to come to the surface. That allows your mind quiet.
Mm-hmm.
it can be really hard to find the quiet to meditate. So I'm a fan of alternatives like taking a 10-minute walk, mm-hmm. Or putting on an app that guides you through it. There's quite a few of them. I forget the title of the one that I used for a while, but
I use
now
one called Headspace. Do you know that one?
Yes, that's the one I was going to think of.
Very good.
That's very good. So meditation, read. So many people say, "Oh, I don't have time to read," and I'm like, "You can't write if you don't read." Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I don't want to tell people that they don't have enough time to be a writer, but the fact of the matter is, you do have time. I don't care if you have to put the book on the back of the toilet, if you have to learn how to, you know, download audiobooks from your library. There are so many free audiobooks on a library, and almost everyone has a phone that can hear them. Mm-hmm. So find a way. Read a book to your child. Bedtime stories. Mm-hmm. If that's all you can do, you're still getting story. You're still filling that well. And you're spending time with your kid. Mm-hmm. I still do that. I still read to family members sometimes. So
okay, which one are you reading at the moment?
What the Thief series. Oh, this is amazing. Here's the first one. The Thief by Megan Whalen Turner. It's a 6-book series, and her writing is exquisite.
Okay.
Very quirky, very a lot of comedy, but a lot of high drama. And it's appropriate down to, I would say, 11.
Okay.
So read, music. I like to pick soundtracks for my books. So even when I'm not with the book at the time, I can listen to that soundtrack and make that thinking click in when I'm scheduling my thinking time. And then just
so does that help you get into the zone much quicker, does it, if you're kind of playing that music? Do you play it while you're writing?
I play it while I'm writing, and I'll play it when I need to think about it.
Okay.
I'm one of those crazy people you might see pacing back and forth in her living room, waving her arms around with her headphones on. And that is me writing. Especially if you have very limited time to write, create a ritual that will snap your brain into this is writing time. For me, that ritual is headphones on, the music track for whatever I'm writing goes on, and I have a hot drink, preferably coffee. Now I have to drink decaf, but it still works because it's that you try to have those sensory inputs that teaches you this is what's going on. For a long time in my life, I didn't have a particular place I could write, so it became coffee. I could get coffee in any country I lived in, and any cafe could become my place.
Okay, yeah.
So that was the trigger. Just find your trigger. Do you have a particular water bottle you drink from while you're writing? If you pick up that water bottle, fill it up, and sit down wherever you are, that water bottle teaches you, I'm writing.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I kind of feed it and keep it going. And sometimes it's still going to fail, and it's okay to take a break and look at yourself and say, is there something going on inside of me that is so urgent and so huge that I can't hear my muse right now? And sometimes the answer is yes. I mean, a lot of people are saying in quarantine right now, oh, we should have all the time in the world for writing. And the fact of the matter is, you know, I have two relatives on the front line of healthcare. Sometimes, you know, you're just thinking about that, and you have to allow yourself those moments to think about it. Don't beat yourself up, and then try the ritual again and see if it works.
Well, fantastic. Thank you so much, Bethany, for chatting to me today. You have given the audience and myself, I have to say, so many gems there. I'm going to be listening back to this and I've been taking notes while we've been chatting, but I know I'll be taking more when I re-listen to it. So thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your advice.
Thank you. And thank you for the awesome questions.
A pleasure. I hope we'll keep in touch.
Agreed. Okay. I think we will.
Thank you.
All right. Best of everything.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you found that helpful and inspirational. Now, don't forget to come on over to Facebook and join my group, Turning Readers into Writers. It is especially for you if you are a beginner writer who is looking to write their first novel.
If you join the group, you will also find a free cheat sheet there called Three Secret Hacks to Write with Consistency. So go to emmadesi.com/turningreadersintowriters, hit join, and I'll can't wait to see you in there. All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.